This is the Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified Podcast. Today we have Jimmy Hatzel. I hope I didn't butcher that, from That's Scout right. Security. What's going on, man?
Not much. Just happy to be here. Another Monday filled with new cyber news, and it's an interesting time to work in cybersecurity, that's for sure.
What are you guys seeing in the SOC?
Everyone saw the Kaseya, incident that happened. It was a big deal for a lot of our customers and partners. For me, it was really cool. I'm on the go-to-market side, but I run internal communications for our entire company. So watching that threat develop from we saw it from when it was just, a post on a Discord channel or a Slack channel, and then watching it, materialize and become more and more legitimate, and being part of the SOX war room to help get the word out there and, say what's happening and, release statements and stuff. It just seems like the biggest cyber attack that's ever happened is happening every month.
Was Scout a part of any of the discovery of any of that stuff? I didn't see anything officially come from Scout, on the whole, because Huntress was pretty much doing the spew of their bullshit. But, was Scout unofficially part of any of the discovery and IOCs or anything like that?
We were implementing the IOCs in real time. We weren't publishing them publicly. We were communicating to our partners. So we sent out threat advisories every week. We send out it used to be one a week when we started them, basically an emerging threat and whatever remediation you can do. Now it's gone to three or four just because the amount of threats have happened. We try to keep them to technology that's relevant to our customers, partners. So, for us, it was more, we're involved in all of those communication channels where it was initially unfolding. We were loading up IOCs as they were happening in that, those first couple hours, but we were not publishing our results publicly or part of that Reddit thread or anything.
Did you guys get any of your clients pop? Well, let me rephrase that. You didn't get your clients pop. That was Kaseya's fuck up. Did any of your Kaseya partners get popped?
We were very fortunate in that the overwhelming majority did not. We had a couple small ones, and I will say one that happened and it was contained pretty quickly was a company had a former technology partner or MSP that had the software, the agent still installed on their computer that was never fully removed. So that's how that one happened.
If I can stop you there, we had Brian Weiss on here, former Kaseya user. He got popped with ransomware back in 18. His VSA got breached. And he came across some of his clients and colleagues who took over clients from Kaseya VSA MSPs. And it was a half-installed agent that came back to life for this breach.
Yeah, it's just a reminder. You really have to remove all old software if you're moving, from a managed provider. Especially, remote monitoring tools. People have old versions of LogMeIn or TeamViewer or SplashTop or whatever, especially with work from home. A lot of people have that stuff. So it's just being mindful of what's even installed on your computer.
That gets into a good point that I've always, stressed about and really scream at the top of my lungs as much as possible. Being able to have an MSP or any technologist go in and say, all right, we're implementing zero trust from the signing of our contract. We don't know crap about your network. We're trusting shit. Is that something that Scout helps their partners go through? Legitimately go through and, start labeling only trust and stuff and be like, hey, look, we know this is not part of your stack. You really need to start removing that. Is that something that Scout's doing or on the roadmap for doing? Because I know there's not many security vendors out there that actually do that type of level of auditing.
Yeah, great question. We are, we encourage our partners and customers to do that. We encourage them to, follow best practices, which obviously involves zero trust. Typically we'll, help our customers align to, framework such as NIST or CIS.
No CMMC, even though it's not complete?
Excuse me?
You guys aren't aligning with CMMC, even though it's not even complete?
No, absolutely.
I'm being completely facetious there, by the way.
No. Well, I look at it if you're complying with a framework like NIST, the CMMC is based on NIST. So the regulations such as CMMC level 3, which is really just DFARS, is you're going to comply with the majority of it as long as you're aligned to NIST.
I think we found a unicorn here.
We might have. Just hurt.
We found a managed SOC guy in the channel that sounds like he knows what the hell he's talking about.
In marketing, this, too. In marketing, but, too.
We're only it's six double. Minutes into this thing, so, I mean, let's not get ahead of ourselves yet, okay? You know, I haven't had to, like, rip off my headset yet, so.
But back to, you know, what we were talking about with our products and Zero Trust. So, with our managed endpoint protection, what we, like, we go into a blocking or a, like, watching mode and then a blocking mode where it's basically... It's like white labeling or not white labeling, white listing software as it goes. So what we were able to do with our endpoint protection is we were able to block globally that agent.exe file in all of our endpoint protection customers. And then anyone using any other products, all of that data is logged into our SIEM and to our, you know, analytics platform, we'll call it. And we were able to just search for all the IOCs and just call. And our SOC just, you know, they were just calling anyone that had anything to do with Kaseya, making sure it was offline. And they literally had a list, adding new customers to the list if there's anything that search came up with, and then just crossing them off until they had an actual conversation with the person. And 99% of those conversations were, I'm using the cloud-based or I'm taking it offline right now. But most of them were on the cloud-based, honestly.
How many SOC analysts do you guys have?
Good question, because we're growing.
Or ballpark it. You know, are we talking five?
Yeah, no. Like 20, 25. So we have our analysts, then we have senior analysts, and then we have our red team as well. And then we have our purple team as well. So basically, when an incident happens, we assign a senior analyst and a member from the red team to each case. But this one, I mean, it was so global, it was all hands on deck.
And where's your team located? Continental US, or are we talking Ukraine or Belarus, like Kaseya is offshoring their software coding?
All of our SOC is located in Long Island.
Gotcha.
Yeah, we are CGIS compliant and everything too. So
CGIS is a dumpster fire.
It's tough.
I have never walked into a municipality and they were actually compliant to what CGIS wants.
Yeah. But, we can work with municipalities and police stations and stuff. So
what type of platform are you guys running? You mentioned Elastic, and are you an XDR?
Yes.
I saw that. Yes. Part of the Barracuda announcement was that they're getting to the XDR game. So how does Scout define XDR these days?
Sure. So XDR, extended detection and response, in my view of things is, an XDR has to have some form of technology and then some form of people as well, and then multiple layers. So those are the three criterias that I will use for evaluating an XDR, whether or not it's an XDR platform. So MDR is a great example. You have some form of endpoint protection software, typically, and then you have a SOC or some sort of response team that responds when something happens. XDR is that, plus email, plus SIM, plus any other, you know, products you layer in. It's the combination, it's the expansion of MDR into multiple layers of cyber and the really the natural progression of the market.
What are you guys using for your endpoint? I know you're using Inky on email, or at least you were. I don't know if you still are.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, we're using Cylance.
Okay. And why did you guys choose Cylance, if you're privy to that or part of that decision-making process?
It works really well. That's why we use it. No, it does. We have longer plans in our roadmap to integrate more endpoint protection programs in. I can't really talk about them because I don't know exactly what they're going to be, or, you know, we're not ready yet. But that is a big part of Barracuda's plan for the Scout XDR platform to be able to integrate with more endpoint protection softwares.
Now, you guys, I mentioned that you're a unicorn, but I think Scout is almost a unicorn in and of itself, because it started off as a company. I believe your founder either started it over in Ireland and brought it over.
I actually started in the US, but yeah, he's an Irish guy. Very good.
And then you were offloaded to RSC Ventures, and I would say you're probably the first MSP play to get flipped by a PE firm. And I would say RSC seemed to have nurtured you guys really well to put you back on the marketplace, as opposed to gutting you and having your service level go down to shit, like most of the other PEs are doing in the channel.
Hey, you know, RSC was a great partner for us, especially during growth. We have Matt Higgins, who, you know, is the CEO over at RSC. It's backed by Stephen Ross, And they, you know, they know customer service really better than most venture capital out there. I mean, they have companies like Equinox, SoulCycle, you know, like Milk Bar, a lot of direct to consumer companies. So this was sort of a unnatural company for them, I guess. They helped us get to a level and maintain a level of customer service that was super high. So when we look at customer service in the same way, when I look at marketing and branding, look past B2B. How can we look at direct to consumer spaces, or, you know, like, you know, direct to like companies that have a higher standard for customer service and their brand and marketing than maybe a lot of B2B companies or cyber companies have. And when you're comparing yourself to people outside of your industry for that, it's easier to raise the standard. So
circle back just a bit before we get too far off the topic. It's really interesting that you chose Cylance as y'all's partner. Was that a scout decision, a Barracuda decision? And what made y'all decide to go with Cylance versus something like a CrowdStrike or one of the other leading competitors to that?
Great question. I mean, we chose Cylance in 2018 and have been building off it since then. I wasn't part of the evaluation process, so I can't tell you exactly. I just know that it has worked very, very well for our customers and partners. Again, now it's a changing market. You always have to respond to things and you know, respond to the changing market. So when we built our platform to set it up, we didn't set it up all like we don't just manage when we're deploying things, we aren't just deploying Cylance, right? We have our own dashboard that we integrate everything from Cylance. So we can, we built it things out for the future, knowing that the technology might change, people might want to use something else in the future. So the direction that we're heading with our XDR platform is the options of, you know, multiple endpoint protection companies. So I think like when you're looking at why did you choose Cylance, it's more like that was the first company that, you know, our partnership made perfect sense for them with us. The technology was good, especially at the time that we were, you know, starting to really build out our XDR platform. And now, you know, as we mature and grow, it's going to get bigger and there's going to be more providers in there as well. But, you know, I love, you know, you mentioned CrowdStrike, SentinelOne's a great company. There's lots of, you know, Carbon Black as well. Like there's lots of great endpoint protection, and we have worked with these in the past, and you don't need to use Cylance if you're a Scout customer. Just if you want our managed endpoint protection, that's what we're currently using.
You mentioned that you guys built a dashboard for the products you sell, pull it all together. Is that just a Kibana, or is it something more proprietary than that?
No, great question. And I appreciate that because I've seen a lot of people just using Kibana. So version
I came from Perch, so I know the I know how that is supposed to work.
Yeah, so version 0.5 beta was Kibana. And then the reporting, really the thing that had us move off of it was the reporting. It wasn't robust enough and customizable enough. So we actually built our own reporting engine. And we rebuilt everything using Node.js and React. So everything's built custom.
You mentioned that you guys are a customer-centric company, or because of RSC, you're more of a customer service-oriented type of company. How do you interact with a CISO at a client of yours? Now, are you guys channel only?
We are channel only, but you know, like
why?
It was the best way for us to help the most people.
He's losing his unicorn status.
Yes, I told you.
16 minutes in and he done fucked it up. But anyway.
Why? No, let's dig into that. Why?
I don't believe any company should be channel only because okay. I think you miss out on a considerable cross section of opinions and ideas from other people. And I don't think it hurts to get more data points in. It's going to cost you more to filter through the bullshit, but I do have a preference for non-channel only vendors.
Interesting.
And then you said the help word.
Excuse me?
You said the help word.
We're trying to help.
No, we're trying to make money. We're doing the Ponzi scheme that is MSP. Like that's, you know, that's where I see MSP. It's like,
I've got an opinion on the channel only. I'm okay with the channel only as long as you also market towards large enterprise companies with internal IT departments, but give those leads to MSPs.
And by MSPs, he means himself and only himself.
Well, so I think that this is, you're making some good points, and the evolution of our SOC sort of maybe by accident got us there. I'd like to say it's on purpose, but I don't know. So we started out selling direct when we first started the business. And then naturally, MSPs were brought into the conversation in half, if not more, of deals. And we were mostly focused on the mid-market. But our security operations center has operated with direct customers, you know, legacy, as we call them. We have served Fortune 500 companies and very large public companies as well. So we know, like, a lot of companies are trying to build the software, then build the SOC after. We built the SOC and then built the XDR platform, the software afterwards, which makes it a lot easier to scale. So I definitely appreciate with what you're saying, because if you're just building the software and then, you know, only going to MSPs and trying to catch up building the SOC after, I could see how that could be extremely, extremely difficult, because having those large scale incident response scenarios, working with the CISO team, working with, you know, reporting on like with government agencies, if something happens, these are things that a SOC has to go through and actually feel that I guess, pain to actually reach that level of maturity and provide that service level and have that expertise. And like, if I thought about like, if we tried to do that now, building the SOC after just having the platform, it would be extremely difficult. I don't even know how we could scale that fast. We have enough, hard enough time now hiring enough people to work in our SOC. So couldn't imagine starting over.
So with the inception of Barracuda Strength, and forgive me, is it official that Barracuda is acquiring Scout? Is that public yet?
Yes, the acquisition completed last week. Barracuda has acquired Scout Cybersecurity.
So,
did you have any equity?
I can't comment on that.
So, yes.
It's but basically anyway. He came in after the RSC acquisition. Did you come in before or after RSC?
Right after RSC.
Missed it.
We can have that conversation offline.
But anyway, with the acquisition from Barracuda, is this where Scout will actually start expanding outside of the quote-unquote channel and start taking on new entities?
Well, so, I mean, like, the demand for XDR is massive, and Barracuda is a very big company. So Barracuda MSP is where we're integrating in. So currently anyone who wants to join our platform, your one Scout will go through a managed service provider or Barracuda MSP or Scout, you know, MSP, will make the referral. So there's already been interest from, Barracuda direct customers, and we're putting them all through MSPs.
Gotcha.
What makes you guys different from all the other managed SOC players in the channel, or what do you think makes you different?
So I think a couple of things, SOC maturity is one. I already talked about that, so I need to talk about that again. Two, but the like level of our platform. So like, we're not just managed endpoint, or we're not just SOC, or we're not just SIM. You know, we're looking to be that XDR platform. And I think a lot of people are saying XDR, but I think that we're actually doing it. So managed email protection, managed endpoint protection, log security monitoring, network security monitoring, authentication monitoring is something that we've looked at and in our product roadmap. Infrastructure monitoring is in our product roadmap as well. So like, what makes us different to, I believe wholeheartedly, is the level of service you're going to get from our SOC, which probably everyone would say, but I actually think ours is better, and we've talked about why. And then two, the extent that our platform actually covers holistically is not just an endpoint protection company.
So going back to email protection, what are you guys actually doing there? Are you just letting Inky run its game and its feature set, or are you actually setting it up, managing it, triaging? And the second part of my question is, what are you guys doing in terms of network analysis and potentially protection?
Sure. The latter on your first question. So, you know, we're managing the setup, we're ingesting that data as well. All of the alerts that come in from our input, from our email protection, go into that dashboard. You can actually like reset passwords from our dashboard, and, you know, set up filtering rules, stuff like that. So like we're building it for cross functionality. So there's things like O365 security monitoring, which is another product. So by having the email protection, yeah, you have the technology through Inky, but the management of it, that cross-correlated with our own Office 365 monitoring is much more powerful. And then, you know, should something happen, we have our SOC on it, whether it's, you know, phone calls to, you know, or helping you work through a remediation. Does that answer your first question?
It does, but now you branched me off here. Okay. What are you doing for tenancy? Office 365 tenancy monitoring? Are you just looking at the canned reports that are coming out of 365, or are you actually doing some threat hunting and analysis of what PowerShell may be running in the tenant?
Great question. I think I would probably need an SE to answer them, and which is my cop-out.
Slack them and get them on here.
what types of security use cases are most common. So there's multiple logins from different geolocations, 2FA bypass or 2FA disable, delegate access added, email forwarding added, forwarding rules, external forwarding rules. Those are some of the most common security use cases that we're alerting on.
So it's pretty much the standard event log notifications out of 365. And you're just parsing with your own rule sets.
I mean,
not to diminish what you're doing, but I think that's the limitation of 365, right? I don't think anyone can actually do more than that based on what's available through the Graph API.
Yeah, I mean, we use the same API everyone, you know, is using. It's by the same limitations, you know, with the delay of data sometimes, stuff like that, that everyone has. But I think it's important on the cross correlation. So yeah, O365 monitoring is great, but when you have O365 monitoring and email protection, and then you can get the logs from both of them and correlate them in the same platform, that's when you're getting that multiple layers of things, including endpoint too, or network or log. If you're seeing traffic from similar IP addresses across multiple products or users, that's how we can get these minor alerts, yellow, that actually all of a sudden is a red because it's across multiple vectors.
Well, speaking about multiple vectors, are you tracking threat correlation across multiple clients of the same MSP to identify whether it's a breach at the MSP, whether it's RMM or poor hygiene?
Great question. Yes, our MSPs have the ability to view things on a global, on the use case rules set up globally. I think that's going to be a tenant by tenant basis. Case.
So you can have one tenant that's out of the box, and by out of the box, your recommended best practice could be flagging for different things from a different tenant?
No. So what I'm saying is if you are an MSP, right, and you have 10 customers, let's say, just to keep it simple, they're all separate. But if you want to run reports across your customers on alerts, you have that ability. So I'm not sure exactly out of the box whether or not we are running security use cases across multiple clients, I'd call them. Underneath. I really don't know.
If you don't mind, if you can follow up on that with me, because I'm curious, because not a lot of the managed SOC providers in the channel, and maybe I'm not phrasing the question correctly, and maybe you guys are doing it, the managed SOC guys in the channel don't seem to be able to identify these 10 clients as, say, my clients. And if they're all having same indicators of compromise, what's the lowest common denominator here? That would potentially be my issue or an issue stemming from my company.
I see what you're saying. So on the SOC side, there's parent-child relationship, and we can see threats across clients. So when the analyst is going in, this has happened before. I know this has happened before. We can see and identify when there's threats from multiple clients and sort of like, so let me explain this so we can make sure we're on the same page, because I think this is what you're saying. Many SOC analysts, it's set up in their system where they just have companies, right? They just have companies and they may or may not be attached to an MSP. So they're not able to really see, like, company A has some threat, company B has some threat, and company C has some threat. And there's not any data point or parent organization tied in that specific system. Whereas in their Salesforce or their CRM, they might have that great data, but in the SOC, it's not set up that way. So that they can't, that knowledge isn't there. Is that what you're saying?
That, and then there's also training deficits where some of the managed SOC providers aren't training their analysts to identify the correlation between clients for a single MSP.
And yeah.
I think if your channel only, as most of the managed SOCs are, that should be one of the first things you teach your analysts. Say, hey, these two clients are having the same IOCs. Do they belong to the same MSP? And is it Kaseya VSA?
Yeah. No, that's a great question. You got some good questions, man. You really understand this stuff. We are absolutely.
I fake it till I make it. Eric's the brain power here, man. I'm just here for my looks.
Yeah, nobody's ever asked me that before. But yes, we do have that capability. Our SOC is regularly trained. I'm confident on that one because I've seen them do it.
Now, back to the network piece that I asked about. What are you guys, if anything, what are you doing for the network, and how are you doing it without giving up your secret sauce unless you wanted to?
Sure. I mean, Ken. So we have a sensor that sits on the network. It can be virtual or physical, as many companies do. And basically, we're monitoring for different IOCs coming in and out of the network. So that could be virus signatures, that could be IP addresses, that could be, you know, it mostly command and control servers would be the most common thing. You know, this is communicating with this command and control server. So like, great example, somebody is on your Wi-Fi at your business. They're not set up in whatever your MDR provider, your endpoint protection provider. There's a virus on that. It's talking home to command and control server, or the signature of the virus traveling through, then the network monitoring would be able to identify that. And then, you know, we'd be able to isolate that machine and start triaging that.
Are you putting in a network tap that's basically mirroring the uplink port?
I do not believe so, but I don't know exactly.
So when y'all are actually doing it, are y'all actually looking at beacons inside of the network, or how's that threat intel pretty much get analyzed?
Can you repeat that?
So are you looking at the beaconing of the agents of what the communication is going across the interface, or how are y'all start really diving into that? Is that too much of a proprietary type of analyst?
I don't think it's proprietary. I think it's probably just above my head. Again, like, you know, I like to get technical. I have a background in cyber, but I am on the marketing side, not working in the SOC. So I don't have full knowledge on everything.
So what, just for those who don't understand, the beaconing is like if my workstation is making periodic calls to Google, that's called a beaconing. It's constantly making that stuff. So if you have, you know, a workstation starting to do various beacons or intermittent beacons, things of that nature, that's really what starts setting off a lot of red flags with a lot of the IDCs or IDSs.
I'm looking at one of your marketing pieces on your Salesforce right now. It's your network security monitoring piece. You know what, Eric? Maybe I can throw this up for you.
I'll bring it up for you right now.
Got it? Yep. You guys are looking for cross-site scripting, SQL injection. Mm-hmm. How quickly did you detect that in the Kaseya incidents on any of your affected clients?
So, okay, great question. So once we uploaded the iOS, so the agent.exe was getting flagged by Cylance right away. So anyone who had Scout Endpoint Protection, we were able to stop that as it was happening. I don't know when or if the IOCs from the actual SQL injection attack to, you know, get that initial access to like the 0-day in the Kaseya VSA was detected or not. So I don't know that.
Yeah, because that's really two different aspects. I mean, the agent, mm-hmm. K agent or agent EXE, but the SQL injection. Yeah, the SQL injection is against the cloud instance, and the agent is just a remote agent back on the VSA. So
basically, you're asking if we were able to detect the initial SQL injection 0-day that everyone was, you know, breached by, and I don't know if we were able to, but I don't really think anyone did, right?
Hey, at least you're being honest, so I can accept that.
I do think that John over there at Blackpoint Blackpoint was saying that they were actually seeing some of that early signs of indication before the IOCs was put out. I'll have to double check. I may be putting words in his mouth, but I do think he made that claim.
Would you say you work in tandem with a Huntress, or is that a direct competitor?
No. I mean, we do threat hunting for a SOC as part of our red team's exercises and our purple team's exercises. But like, Huntress can work alongside Scout Endpoint Protection. I wouldn't consider them a direct competitor.
Now I'm going to throw Eric on the hot spot here. You mentioned your red team a few times, and that is Eric's thing, right? He does a lot of incident response. I think he's more IR than he is MSP at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Do you guys make that red team available to clients of your MSPs if they want to go through some type of pen testing? And I'm going to ask the question because I know Eric's going to come with it. Are you guys just using a Nessus scan, or is it something more encompassing?
No. So if they want a penetration test, we have a list of providers that we recommend. We don't want to be penetration testing ourselves. Other customers will require vulnerability scans for clients' reasons or just because they want them. We will do more than just the report that comes with a Nessus or a Tenable or, you know, whatever vulnerability scanner you're using.
Gotcha. So, yeah, that's one of the things that we always get queried with, especially ones that we've been taking after a incident response, or like, So yeah, can you, you know, pen test us? I'm like, yeah, but we're not going to.
Yeah, I mean,
we already know the loopholes, you know? So, I mean, yeah, we definitely have some partners that we actually outsource as well or refer over. But yeah, it's good to hear that you're taking that stance. Like, look, if we're being the security firm for your organization and being that, you know, outside resource, we cannot pen test you at the same time. And there's so many companies out there that will, or they will just flat out say, hey, here's an Mmap export, or here's a Nessus scan or rapid fire tool scan. Yeah, I'm about to drop 7,000 pages on your damn desk. And,
stop talking about Network Detective. Come on. That shit doesn't work.
That's just a great way to kill a tree or forest.
I've got a couple questions if I can jump in.
No, you can't.
My caffeine is kicked in now, so I'm a little more awake.
Before you get started, Brian, I just want to warn Jimmy that he's literally just waking up because he's from the West Coast or on the West Coast.
He's a slacker.
It's not even 9 a.m. there.
Major slacker.
He knows how he was late to the actual meeting, right? So
I'm curious, a couple things. Number one is when you do your threat hunting, what do you rely heavily on the SIM to where you're kind of building this mousetrap to identify things that you need to hunt further, right? And then look for threats.
No, the answer is no. We have a separate data lake that sits parallel to our SIM. So we're hunting in that data lake.
Okay. And then do you have any analytics that you or metrics that you track as far as average time to stop a known threat that's found?
Great question. I don't know. Everyone wants a metric from their SOC. I don't know them off the top of my head. For high alerts, our SLA is our internal time that we get back to someone is under 5 minutes and 30 for medium. And it's a little longer for low alerts. What might be helpful and is not totally answering your question, so you can stop me if it's not, is the process of what happens when we identify a threat. So basically, immediately verify it, send the actual alert. And if it's, you know, high, we're going to call and try to get someone on the phone at the organization. So we have the contact list, who we call first. And then, as I said before, it gets escalated to a senior analyst and someone from the incident response team as well. And they'll open up a communication bridge. And we actually have those two people, at least they're running it. They're assigned on our side. We'll have other resources from the SOC as well. Work directly with the partner and or customer. In some cases, it's one or the other. In some cases, both. Most of the times, it's usually just the MSP until we can get that actually stabilized. And sometimes that'll be 12 hours, 20 hours. I mean, we're just staying on. It's not like we're just sending, here's what you do, you know, good luck. And then after that, we write up the incident report. Which can be used for any number of reasons you would need an incident report, including legal, insurance, notification, things like that.
What percentage of threats do you run into that Scout's able to stop on their own without involving the MSP versus alerting an MSP and needing to rely on them to help stop it?
Great question. And this is just back to basic cyber. 90%+ of generic cyber threats that turn into a big problem can be solved with good cyber hygiene. And what I mean by that is good email protection, good endpoint protection that's actually going to stop things, MFA, and some form of authentication monitoring, whether that's network log or whatever. So yes, we do have, you know, SIM services, we have all of this stuff, and that's going to stop that last 10 or 20% of threats and help detect them when they're actually happening. It's a larger scale attack. But for the most case, the email driven attacks, RDP driven attacks, ransomware driven attacks, good email protection, good, you know, best practices for disabling ports and 2FA, MFA, good endpoint email protection going to stop those.
Do you have your own EDR agent?
Silence.
Okay. So do you have the ability to run scripts yourself, or do you have to rely on the MSP for that?
I'm not sure, to be totally honest with you. I don't think that we do in all clients, so I don't know.
Well, if it's a managed silence provided by Scout, I think it might be a fair assumption, not to put words in your mouth, that you probably could.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just trying to get an idea because I, you know, it seems like I've kind of, you know, when I look at someone calling themselves a SOC, I've really just put them in two containers. There's a SOC that alerts you of issues, and there's an actual actionable SOC where you've given them a playbook and said, hey, if you find XYZ, you stop this on your own. Don't even bother, you know, contacting us for approval first, right? Because a 24/7 SOC, I mean, if there's something especially happening after hours that you know 100% is suspicious behavior, you know, why create an alert and wait for the next morning for the MSP to address it? I was just trying to get an idea of how actionable Scout actually is as far as being a SOC, or how much do you rely on the MSP to actually help stop these threats once found?
Yeah, great question. I will say that our whole roadmap is moving in that direction. We do some of the stuff right now. We've integrated some things like the ability to reset passwords and close off accounts in our dashboard, and then our analysts can actually do that. So like, that's where we're going. I will say a lot of that, like, people always say, well, you know, this product actually does the remediation. And it turns out the remediation is the endpoint protection software has some feature that freezes or rolls back or something like that. So like, I think that a lot of people, when they're comparing these things, they aren't comparing them apples to apples. They'll take a software feature that's integrated in a managed security service, and then that software feature is the remediation, and then go to another MSSP and say, do you do remediation? Because this company does. And they're actually talking about the software and not, and that MSSP is thinking like actual like IR remediation. So I think like a lot of this gets muddied up just in like people are just talking about different things, definitions, like definitions and context is always so important. I don't know. That's my little rant about it because I hear that a lot.
Hey, Jimmy, can you walk me through what onboarding with you guys is like in terms of your XDR product and any playbooks that maybe need to be filled out, if at all, by the MSP or the clients or on behalf of the clients? Because I think that's where you're going with it, right, Brian?
Yeah, a lot of it's recently changed. And I haven't gone through it like years ago. I went through the actual onboarding process to understand it. And now a lot of it's more self-service, more automated. And so
I guess not necessarily the onboarding process, but more focusing. Well, let me break it up into a couple different questions for you. Do you guys ask for playbooks from your partners and their customers?
For remediation playbooks? Is that what you're getting
at? So like as Brian said, you know, if XYZ happens or it's this type of incident, go to town on it. Don't call me. Just do what you can with the software I'm buying from you to take care of my crap.
Yeah, we have a couple of NOC partnerships that if someone wants that level of service, we will steer them that way. So we aren't like we're trying to stay in the security realm. So when it comes to making a lot of changes in people's environment, like it takes a lot. Like you have to have access to the documentation, you have to have all this stuff. So right now we are moving that way, but moving that way software based, if that makes sense.
Okay. But if it's an incident, I mean, wouldn't you guys have, and you're doing XDR, aren't you supposed to have a playbook saying, you know, if there's a ransomware outbreak, go in there, start shutting things down, isolating, and, you know, at least stop the spread? Or is that something you guys are going to and not there yet?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on the client. Like most, like our MSP is giving full access and remote logins and everything to their entire network, to their security partner, and are comfortable making those changes like with permission ahead of time. That's like another area. So I don't know. I don't have a, like we manage to stop them when they're happening. I will say that. But if a ransomware attack is happening on a network in real time and no one from the MSP is
doing their job.
Yeah. It's just a NOC partnership probably makes sense for them. To have someone to have that level of service.
You know, speaking of NOC, I read somewhere, maybe sometime in the last year, and I could be going crazy because I just read too much, perhaps. You guys have a NOC partnership with a company here based out of New Jersey.
Correct.
I don't know if it's public, so I don't know if you want to go into that and tell us about it.
No, it's very public. ITY Design.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what does that partnership entail for you guys?
Yeah. So ITY Design has what we call, what they call the SNOC product. So it's NOC plus SOC. So you can actually get, we worked there. Yeah, I know the acronym's getting out of control.
Yeah, I'm literally just interrupting. I'm over here working on doing a threat hunt right now, trying to figure out why Workstation is beaconing to some cPanel in Canada, and that your whole snack. I'm like, what? Huh?
I thought we were getting snacks, but okay.
So we work directly with their team. So we have, you know, we know how to work together. We have a lot of joint customers, partners. So they are able to do all that hands-on stuff. We also have worked with other NOCs in the past. And the majority of outsourced NOCs that you can go to has some sort of relationship with us, unless they're standardized and will not allow us, just because their customers have Scout and, you know, we've worked with them.
Are you guys using any RMMs internally for your own systems?
For our own systems, we are not deploying any RMMs on any. Okay, so we are not deploying RMMs on any of our customers. Our IT help desk has, you know, their own services that they use, but that is completely segregated from the SOC network. So the SOC network and the network that I'm a part of and the IT access that, you know, they have on my computer, they don't have that at all on any SOC computer or any SOC network. It's completely segregated.
So you guys are not using an RMM internally? Not for your clients, but for your own, like yours, your boss.
I don't know exactly what our IT help desk is using. To be totally honest with you, I'm pretty technical. I never really file tickets for anything. So
the reason I ask is because with all the breaches that have happened in the last 3 or 4 years, I'm wondering if a SOC or a managed SOC would weigh the risk of having an RMM and just go down the road of something else and just not use an RMM.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. Again, it's like, when you look at security in general, like, you know, availability is a big part of it. So whether or not you can do your job without that, you know, that's something to consider as you're weighing the risk of things. So it's not whether, like, yeah, I could have the most secure computer ever if it was disconnected from the internet, but I need the internet to do my job. So we're constantly, so where we are in that level of, you know, availability and being able to do your job versus the security risk of RMMs in general, I don't think, to my knowledge, people aren't saying disable all RMMs and don't use them on your network anywhere. Maybe certain softwares, but I don't know. Maybe we're heading that direction. I don't know. I don't know the answer.
So Blizz, he's out there saying RMM's dead. You should pull it off. If you run on-premise RMM, then you're pretty much a damn idiot.
What are you guys using for your threat intel feeds? Are we talking CrowdStrike, Alien Vault, Ported Future?
Great question. We have 76 feeds, I think. We're part of the Department of Homeland Security's threat sharing program. So we get all of, so basically all the government, I don't know how familiar you are, your audience is, but the government agencies used to all have their own threat intel. So CIA, NSA, FBI, they would have their own threat intelligence. And then Department of Homeland Security went and aggregated all of them to create one feed for the federal government. And then they partner with private providers to increase that feed. So we are feeding, we are part of that two way. So we've actually found things in the wild and reported it that actually gets ended up being a DHS threat intel report. It's happened a couple times and we get the majority from there. And then we have a number of threat intel private providers. Their SOC is constantly changing them. I will say a big part of our Barracuda partnership is Barracuda is a cyber company. They've been doing cybersecurity a long time. They're a very big company and they're a cyber company at their core. So like when you look at the other channel only providers, a lot of them are partnering up with channel companies or MSP software vendors, if you will, rather than cyber companies. So one major benefit that we have being acquired by a cyber company is greater access to threat intelligence feeds and, you know, their own internal threat intelligence. So more on that to come. And our SOC is super excited about the acquisition because of, you know, that's the threat intel that comes with it is a big part of it.
So if you can make some recommendations, and I ask you this because I saw you have a technical background before you got into the land of marketing and make believe.
The dark side or the
I wouldn't call it the dark side. You need marketing to make money. You don't have money, you can't keep the lights on.
Yeah.
You know? And you seem to not be spewing the bullshit that I get in this channel. So
I didn't come in
that and say
the AI, machine learning, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, we would have just canceled the interview and been like, let's go get something to eat. Other than obviously buying Scout services, what would you say the top 5 things are for any company out there to do to baseline their security to put them in a better position?
Great question. So I'm going to give an answer twice. So I'm going to give a high level answer on an organization, how you look at that. And I'm going to give practical answer. So the first thing, so the high level, first thing you need to do is figure out what critical data you have and what you want to protect. So if you don't know what you're trying to protect, you're going to have a hard time actually setting up any sort of security program. That's the first thing. The second thing is taking layers of protection around that data. So let's say that the thing you want to protect most is, you know, some trade secret or your actual product, then you're going to want to build the layers around that. So I'm going to talk about that layers in my second answer. The third thing you want to do is you want to have a way to figure out if you have a problem. So in addition to the layers, you know, you need the endpoint protection, you need all that stuff, email filtering, blah, 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 but you need something to actually monitor that. So you need to actually monitor that data. Then you need to have a plan for response. So the difference between a contained threat that happens internally and it's just, you know, an exciting Friday, and a very public problem is the time it takes to respond to that threat. So you need to have a way to bring that response time down. And then the last thing is you need to pick standard and work towards it. So, you know, if you don't have anything, Mr. CIS, just, you know, pick it and start following things and start aligning to it. So that's my answer for organizations. The other answer, which is probably what other people would say, is good endpoint protection, good email protection, 2FA, fast time to patch. So a key indicator of how mature a cyber organization is mean time to patch. So you need to have things patched and updated. So endpoint, email, 2FA, time to patch, and then least privilege, least privilege access.
What's your ideal time to patch? Personally, because I know you probably don't want to put Scout on there. What do you think as a former IT practitioner?
So it depends. It depends on a number of things. One, is this an internal system that is highly critical on, like, has highly critical data? So you're looking at two things. One, availability of the systems, and then two, how critical the data is. So if the data is super critical, you're going to want to be running patches as fast as possible, not immediately when they come out. And if it's a highly available system and it is not a, you know, 7 or higher on the CVE score or whatever it is something's happening, you may want to do some internal testing on it to make sure it doesn't break everything first. And maybe a 5 or higher or something. I don't know. But the answer is it depends on who's using the system and what it's actually protecting. But the general rule is as fast as possible that it's not going to disrupt day-to-day work too much.
I got one last question for you, then I'll turn you over to Brian and Eric. Do you think the vast majority of MSPs actually test their patches like they say they do in their sales pitch, or are they just taking some default offset time from their RMM? This answer will get you in trouble with the MSP community.
How I would know that. I would say that our really good partners aren't having problems with zero days because they're keeping things patched. So I guess that's what I can say on it. If you're a partner with us and you're rolling out log and network security monitoring, or even if you're just a partner with us in general, your security posture is probably higher than the average MSP. So I guess
I have one last question for you. There's always one more. Mm-hmm. Who do you think should use a SOC or SIM, XDR, whatever you want to call it? Because to me, it's all six of one, half does the other. What type of companies do you think should be using a Scout type service? Just to lump you in and create that category of XDR and SOC and whatever.
Yeah, I think everyone should be using email protection and endpoint protection. I think whether it's us or someone else, you definitely need that no matter what. And a managed version of it. If you are not a larger organization that you have that 24/7 response capability, would be highly encouraged. For network and log security monitoring, it's going to be as the organization grows and what they're doing and what systems they have. So if there's no internal network, maybe network security monitoring isn't, you know, a great solution for them, but maybe some sort of log security monitoring is. I would say the majority of network and log 2 years ago was compliance based. So it was people who needed it for compliance. And now that is changing, and it's changing fast. So as employee counts grow past 15, 20, 25, the usage is starting to pick up there. Whereas years ago, it was, you know, 300, 400, unless there are banks or something, you know, that they were required to have it. So I guess my answer is everyone should be using, you know, your basic cyber hygiene stuff on a managed basis, unless you can really manage it yourself and you know what you're doing. And then second to that, medium to I don't want to say medium because that to some people means 500 plus employees, but more mature organizations should be using those higher level of services, the SIM services as well.
So I'll take it from an IR standpoint a little bit and just kind of pick your brains. So I want you to take your scout shirt off. Figuratively, not literally.
I don't have an undershirt on, so I mean,
exactly.
This is not that kind of podcast.
It's gonna have to be figurative.
Yeah, it's gonna be figurative. Figurative, please. So, you know, talking to Jimmy, the person, not the scout representative. When you know, like, we're a small IR firm, right? Mm-hmm. We know that even when we're doing this stuff, you know, we get stretched pretty thin, you know, trying to do all these things. When do you see a company, an MSP or internal IT firm, you know, really start bringing stuff internally and maybe potentially getting away from Scout altogether? I'm just kind of curious, like, when does a company look to actually bring that internally versus an external source?
I mean, we have companies that have 10,000 employees using Scout. So, I mean, it like having to be big enough to hire your own SOC and be able to operate 24 hours is very, very difficult. And it's not very common outside of, you know, Fortune 500 companies, to be totally honest. And there's a couple reasons for that. One, you know, this global shortage of talent that we all talk about. It doesn't mean that every cyber job is unfilled. It means cyber jobs that require experience in management and CISO jobs, there's not enough people to fill them because we need 1 million and there's only 10,000 people with that experience, you know, and that gap is continuing to widen each year. So you have that problem. And then, you know, the increase of data is causing more and more threats to happen. There's a bigger attack surface than ever before. So with those two things, you need more employees, you need 24/7 support, and then you need to basically always be hiring because one of your analysts is always being offered a job somewhere else for better pay and, you know, whatever.
Exactly.
So I good luck. You know, if you can do that, then that's great, but it's very difficult.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm like, what the hell? But yeah, in the community, there's always, you know, talk of, you know, trying to share collaborative data, share, you know, threat intel feeds and things of that nature. Are you seeing, you know, from Scout level where you are starting to see other partners share threat intel feeds? I mean, you take away from Security Futures and Alien Vault and all these other ones, but like MSSP to MSSP or SOC to SOC or whatever. Companies actually shared
at Blackpoint. I emailed him at 2:30, 2:45, the day of the Kaseya attack. I said, "Hey, John, let me know if you want to get in touch with our SOC. We're both here solving the same problem." He replied back, disabled everything, and we were already working on that. So, you know, there's community. We're trying to help the same people. Massive blow. Like, it's not when it's about security, we're talking about people's livelihood. We're talking about their business. So, you know, like I think it's all about, you know, the more sharing we can do, great, but we need to do it well and we need to be smart. But if there's a massive breach like that happening, you know, it's a beautiful thing watching, you know, the Reddit thread come together and different channel focused or channel only providers talking and saying, like, you know, let us know if you need help or let us know if you see anything. And, you know, we were already running in parallel, you know, similar playbooks and getting things taken care of, protecting our customers. But we have that sort of relationship where it's a small enough community and we all know each other and we can reach out.
So I asked one question, you answered a completely different one that I didn't ask. So, you know, when I look at RSS feeds and I look at, you know, IOCs that are being publicized out there on the internet, are you seeing companies like Scout, like Blackpoint and all these other ones actually sharing their IOCs that they're seeing for other SOC analysts to ingest and bring it into their fold and advancing us as a whole?
I think we're not there yet, but we're working on it. You know, CompTIA is really taking that over. So you have the ISOC or ISAL that Perch started and then or ConnectWise/Perch started, announced at IT Nation in 2018, 2019. CompTIA is sort of taking that. So I think that that is, you know, hopefully what will happen, but I don't think we're quite there yet as a community.
When do you think that might be a reality?
I don't know. I mean, we're getting it through, like, it's difficult predict because MSPs are servicing so many different clients. So, like, if you're an MSP that's like the Kaseya breach is a perfect example of why we need one specifically for MSPs. But if you're an MSP focused on manufacturing or industrial, like those threat feeds for that specific vertical already exist and they're out there. So I think that's part of the problem where MSPs are all over the place. And it's sort of rare that something is specific only to that community and more specific towards where the vertical customers are. So I don't know. Hopefully soon.
I realize now that your actionable SOC is actually a partnership with IT by Design, which you call a SNOC. Is that correct?
No. So, well, hopping on the video and getting all that done, that's all us. That whole explanation I gave is us only.
Okay. But it sounded like you won't actually make changes to an MSP client's network without a NOC service involved or a NOC agreement in place. Is that correct? Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think that's a big differentiator that a lot of MSPs don't realize is that, you know, you either have a SOC that's alerting you of things or you've got a SOC that is finding things and stopping threats and without necessarily needing your involvement. So I'm hoping that we can get a better differentiator in our market on that, because one of them is kind of, in my opinion, glorified log aggregation and, you know, a filtering of that of false positives and just alerting MSPs of things that may not be false positives that they still have to interject with. The other thing, too, that I'm curious about, you know, which I've been encouraging a lot of MSPs to do, is if they do have a SOC, to actually put them to the test.
Oh yeah.
You know, set up an environment where you can deploy something and see how quickly they react. Do you have any of your clients doing that with your products?
Yeah, all the time. I mean, we have to catch pen testers. Like if our SOC doesn't catch a pen tester of an end user, you know, one of the big companies we're working at, like that would be a huge problem. So like it happens more often with pen tests than it does in MSP setting up a VM and making some noise, downloading some malware, but both have happened.
Mm-hmm. Can I borrow your red team to test some MSP specific managed SOC vendors?
I don't know. I don't think so.
That's actually a good point, though, right? I mean, that could be a sales tactic for Scout, is like, hey, we'll test your existing services you have in place and think are protecting you.
I mean, right? Eric did it for me with a managed SOC provider I was using.
I'm about to say, stop trying to take away my job.
I'm trying to get you hired as a subcontractor to Scout for when they get too busy, when Barracuda, you know, barracudes them.
Barracuda.
Yes. Anything else you guys have for Jimmy?
No, man. Just thanks, Jim. I mean, Jimmy. Thank you.
Did you not read his LinkedIn post? It's Jimmy. Okay.
It's Jimmy. Okay. But it's hard to really get people who actually will talk the truth on a lot of these matters and, you know, really dive into things that most people just don't want to talk about, right? So I really do appreciate the conversation today.
And sure, the honesty and the transparency that you provided.
Yeah, I enjoyed it as well. You guys asked some good questions.
Sometimes. We ask better questions when we're drinking. So how do people reach out to you?
You can go to our website, getscout.com. You can add me on LinkedIn and connect with me there. Or you can email me, jimmy@getscout.com.
Eric, you want to take us out? Do you know the website this time?
I'm so knee deep in other things. But anyway, thanks again, everybody, for joining yet another podcast. We greatly appreciate y'all tuning in. If you're on Facebook or if you're on YouTube, let's actually get the social media platforms correct. If you're on YouTube, please like and subscribe. Leave us a comment. And if you're on the podcast, please give us a review. It helps us understand what you do like and don't like about this show. And for any and all things upcoming, please visit out our website at amplifiedandintensified.com. And as always, thanks for joining.
Thanks again for joining us for the Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified podcast.